Hello, friends, and good morning from here. This is the 29th of July, 2013, here in Finland, and we are moving on to chapter number 6, and taking up the three crosses. We studied three planets recently, and these planets were Saturn, Mercury, and Uranus. These are the same three planets as we have been finding in relation to the important three constellations, Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces, but they are examined in terms of their rulerships and not in terms of an unusual association with a particular astrological constellation. For instance, Saturn is usually considered in detriment in Leo, and yet it is closely associated, and Mercury has no particular connection with Capricorn other than the decanate connection in the last decanate, and Uranus has no particular connection with Pisces in terms of rulership. So we examined those three and their effect upon humanity. Not an easy section, I think, but an important one. And now we are moving on to the discussion of the three crosses. And let us basically, the Tibetan is giving these sections in rather abbreviated form, more as seed thoughts for our future unfoldment. He says, I shall not be able to handle the subject of the three zodiacal crosses, the mutable, fixed, and cardinal crosses in any detail, owing to the fact that they are concerned with the wholes, or with the syntheses of manifestation, and with the unified experience of an incarnating entity, be it God or man. Every cross is a fourfold synthesis meeting at the center, a fourfold synthesis meeting at the central point. And although the cross can represent, in some respects, division, as when we have a grand cross or a T-cross in our chart, we oftentimes think, well, this is going to be a drawing and a quartering. In fact, if a higher soul confronts these crosses, that soul can bring the many energies of the crosses together. The opposites will meet, and then there will be a union in the center. In fact, the pyramid is the symbol of the elevated cross, the central point rising to a fifth point, which in a way includes all of them. So, in any way, no particular detail, but wholeness is our subject. And that these crosses are concerned with wholes or with the syntheses of manifestation and with the unified experience of an incarnating entity, be it God or man, and hence the masters embrace the crosses. Their charts somehow fulfill all the crosses and give the potential of the kind of synthesis of realization and activity of which in the human race only they are capable. So the masters embrace the synthesis. They can therefore be truly comprehended only by those with an inclusive consciousness, with an initiate awareness. So this study is an exercise in inclusiveness. Some general comments can, however, be made. And we begin here with the cross of the hidden Christ, which is the mutable cross. What does this mean? There is a soul consciousness, and yet it has not emerged, nor has it revealed the unity of things. There is no understanding yet as the soul understands, And instead, the world and the presentations in the contents of consciousness are as if discrete and separate and fragmented. The underlying infusion of all things, or, well, the underlying unification of all things caused by the infusion of soul consciousness is still missing. So here we begin this. This is the cross of the four major energies which produce the conditioning circumstances which transform animal man into the aspirant. This is the cross onto which the newly made human being is transferred. When he, even though he is individualized very much in Cancer with the sign Leo involved, the sign Gemini is also involved. And he is crucified upon this cross, the cross of many changes. Of course, he does not realize that he is crucified. And the very low consciousness, which is barely more than that of an animal, is gradually transformed into a more human and self-aware state on this particular cross, the mutable cross, Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces, as those signs operate in the early days. Of course, they can also distribute energies to which the higher type of human being responds, and a sign like Pisces is even involved in very high initiations. It is therefore the cross of the personality, or of the steadily developing and finally integrating human being, and upon this cross the first stages of real integration take place, integration at least in the personality sense. Perhaps we are not yet talking about the integration of the personality with the soul, which relates more to soul fusion and is found upon the fixed cross. So this integration of the human being, this takes place at first in response to circumstance and later to soul inclination. Upon the fixed cross at first, upon the mutable cross, the human being is not inwardly responsive. Later, when the time for awakening to the inner and higher of the pairs of opposites arrives, then there is the beginning of response to soul inclination. In other words, can the soul or higher power or inner director be sensed upon the mutable cross? And the answer has to be yes, because already as we are entering the love petals, the second tier of petals of the egoic lotus, and stimulating and organizing those petals and gradually unfolding them, the pairs of opposites are coming into view. It's not that the higher of the pairs of opposites controls, the soul does not control, but at least it is sensed as a factor in the consciousness. And it's only when the fifth petal is completely unfolded and work is being done on the seventh petal, and it is somehow influenced by the rod of initiation, that we really are moving from the mutable cross to the fixed cross. So the cross of aspiration, or the experience of aspiration towards higher possibilities within oneself, occur even when the consciousness is still found upon the mutable cross, but it is making transition. And Pisces is one of those signs that assists with this transition. from the latter days of the immutable cross to the early days of the fixed cross. Pisces is always a sign of some degree of finality, and it's a transitional sign, and it brings to an end a certain type of experience under Pluto, and gives entree into a new type of experience, let us say, from the mutable cross to the fixed cross, and later, maybe at the fifth degree, let us say, from the fixed cross, well, really at that time there's no cross, but at least from the state which has been the fixed cross towards the cardinal cross. One wonders how long experience upon the fixed cross lasts. Does it end immediately after the third initiation? I think not. I think it takes the individual through higher stages of soul growth on the way to the fourth initiation, but that initiation is taken neither on the fixed nor cardinal cross. So there is a sense in which the fully conscious soul, right before the fourth initiation, dismounts from the fixed cross and has to undergo this experience with himself, in a way, as the cross, and not yet upon the cardinal cross. But there is the sense in which the mutable, the sign Pisces is active on the fixed cross right before the fourth initiation, and perhaps if another life intervenes, Pisces can be the sign of transition which takes the individual onto the cardinal cross. I think by the time we reach the fifth initiation, as the astrological signs continue to be influential, we are on the cardinal cross. But just the very beginning of that experience, which lasts far longer in the experience of the unit of consciousness than any of the other crosses. So, going on, more definitions of the mutable cross. It is the cross of temporal and temporary change, so there is no overcoming of sense of time, of fluidity, as Mercury is very prominent on this cross, and Mercury is a planet of, I would call it intelligent fluidity at a certain point, maybe simply of fluidity in the beginning. Let instability do its work, along with Gemini. So it's the cross of temporal and temporary change. It does not bring a person into consciousness of consciousness, per se. There is only consciousness of the third aspect of divinity, and the one who is conscious is not the object of consciousness. There comes a time when we become aware of the fact that we are, in a sense, consciousness. And so we become aware of the consciousness process. This is not the same as becoming aware of the contents of consciousness at an earlier time. Of fluidity and of those constantly altering environments, very Mercurian, Geminian, which drive the soul within the form from one extreme of experience to another, so that the life shuttles between the pairs of opposites. This is so Mercurian, isn't it? I mean, if we're looking for a planet which governs this cross of many changes, the planet Mercury is well suited to govern the cross of many changes. And further general descriptions, it is the cross of the responsive form, nurturing and developing the life of the indwelling Christ, the hidden soul or Lord of being, and here we have the Virgo implication. Virgo represents the form and also the consciousness within the form and the emergence of that consciousness from the form. So consciousness grows on the mutable cross until it becomes, in a way, detached from its usual objects. So consciousness grows upon the mutable cross until it becomes detached from its usual objects or contents. This reminds one of the work of Franklin Merrill Wolfe, where he discusses what he calls the philosophy of consciousness without an object, that consciousness, in a way, becomes its own object, which is apparently a paradoxical state. But if we have experienced this to a degree, we know that all the contents of consciousness can become secondary, and the act of being aware is what fills awareness. Let me repeat that for myself so I get it. The act of being aware is what fills awareness. We have, in a sense, then, awareness of the factor of awareness. So consciousness becomes its own object. And this is what we try to enter in the contemplative state when we begin to merge with the object and discover that the object has no real independent being, and that we, in a way, the subject, substand the object and are, in fact, the object. There is no, then, sort of artificial but earlier necessary fifth-ray cleavage between the subject and the object, but we interfuse whatever perception or content of consciousness that we have. Okay. The forearms of this cross are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, Pisces. It is sometimes called the common cross because it conditions the common herd or mass of humanity. But when we were studying the earlier and more exoteric type of astrology, when did we ever realize that to be the case? No good reason in consciousness was offered for the mutable cross being called the common cross. But here it is, described in terms of consciousness, that which relates to the mass consciousness of humanity and to the type of energies available to those who are included in the mass is not distinguished in any way. It has not risen to one of the higher levels possible in consciousness, hence the term common cross. Okay, he's going to do a little review here, I think, of the different kinds of crosses. The fixed cross is the cross of the crucified Christ. We could call it the cross of the visible Christ, the emergent Christ. So often, consciousness as an independent factor, or quasi-independent at least, is veiled and obscured until the very latter experiences on the mutable cross. But a consciousness is the subject, well, the, shall I use subject or object, the purpose of life upon the fixed cross is to develop consciousness, and one begins to notice contrasts in the field of consciousness. It makes no difference what happens to the contents of consciousness, our normal perceptions and registrations, as long as consciousness itself develops. In other words, the old saying, well, look, you passed through something, did you learn anything from that experience? If a person does not learn from a particular experience, it doesn't make any difference what the experience was. At least, it doesn't make any difference upon the fixed cross, because the only way of really progressing upon the fixed cross is to learn from experience. Though there are people wanting to know about astrology, and they say with a sense of relief, "Phew, I got through that one without much difficulty," meaning that the formal life, or the life of form and normal circumstance, stayed reasonably intact. But that is not the point. Things can fall apart grandly. Things can completely disintegrate. And if the person learns something, the loss of the integrity of the object does not matter. What matters is the harvest of consciousness. I'm reminded of, in esoteric healing, the very last of the laws of esoteric healing. And it goes something like this. It's respond, O rising one, to the call which comes within the sphere of obligation. Recognize the call emerging from the ashram or from the council chamber where waits the Lord of Life himself. The sound goes forth, both soul and form together must renounce the principle of life and thus permit the monad to stand free. The soul responds, the form then shatters the connection. Life is now liberated. Here it is, owning the quality of conscious knowledge and the fruit of all experience. These are the gifts of soul and form combined. If we have the preservation of the form without the augmentation of the consciousness, we have not won in terms of the theme of the fixed cross and the basic theme upon our planet as its secondary soul emerges and the major secondary theme of our solar system. It's what more do you know now than you knew before? What greater sensitivity or awareness or refinement of touch is yours now, more so than it was before? That is the harvest. Life is now liberated. The monad is liberated, but it owns the qualities of soul and personality, owning the quality of conscious knowledge and the fruit of all experience. These are absorbed into the monad eventually. These are the gifts of soul and form combined, absorbed first into the triad and then into the monad. So we're looking for the true harvest. We're not looking for the constant perpetuation of the same form, are we? Otherwise, it might be nice just to keep the same body and say, well, I got through that experience with the body intact, but what did we learn? Okay, and by learning, I don't mean just that which comes from the mind, but also that which is of a deeper nature. This is a cross composed of four energies which condition the life of man, who is first the probationary disciple and then the accepted or pledged disciple. And this is interesting. You know, sometimes it is said or inferred that we step upon the fixed cross only at the entrance into the kingdom of God or at the first initiation. But it appears that there is a transitional period when one is dismounting from the mutable cross and mounting the fixed cross. And this occurs during the probationary period, during the period of probationary discipleship. Well, I know I don't have to write all that out. I could, or just say on the path of probation. But there is probationary disciples. Let's see how that one might work here. I'm always interested in my I think I'll make one of those. I'll say probationary discipleship and probationary discipleship. That's one way to do it. And I can even do this, as long as I'm paused, and please be patient with me. Path of probationary discipleship. And indeed, it's there. I didn't realize it. Path of probationary discipleship. Well, anyway, this occurs from the time the fifth petal is unfolding. And so in this particular statement, it seems that the individual is called, the individual who is a probationary disciple has some relation to the fixed cross. But then what we have to do, we have also to try to understand whether in some sense there are only two phases of discipleship. The probationary disciple. Well, that's the pledged. Maybe it's PBD. PRD. Yes, it is. PRD. Whether the probationary disciple and the accepted disciple. Okay. A little pause here. And what I'm saying here is that perhaps a person can be considered a probationary disciple all the way up to acceptance sometime between the first and second initiation. I mean, there are different ways of looking at it. Before the first initiation, one can be called a probationary disciple or an aspirant. Then at the first initiation, one can be called a disciple, which doesn't give any particular qualification to the state. And that stage of disciple can persist until one becomes an accepted disciple. But in a way, before one is an accepted disciple, one is on probation. So from a certain point of view, DK might mean here that this is the cross which conditions the man who is a probationary disciple still after the first degree. There's a certain fluidity in the way these terms are applied. Generally, the pledged disciple will be a stage of probation. When you are on probation, you make a pledge and then are accepted. Well, there's different ways of looking at it as well. You are an aspirant. You are a probationary disciple. Probationary disciple. I realize I'm not quite with it here today. I failed to turn on the recording. That is marvelous. Well, I will repeat then what I said. We're looking at the idea of the probationary disciple and how long that discipleship may last. Because it may indeed last until acceptance, and even then one remains on probation in a sense. So I've written out a little bit of a I've written out some stages here and how one moves from stage to stage. And I think that I did not succeed in recording that for you, so if there's a little bit of discrepancy about how long this particular program lasts, then so be it, and I apologize. But we begin as an aspirant, which is an unstable state in which we at least sense a higher power or the higher of the pairs of opposites and desire it, though we have no special continuity of will which keeps us moving in that direction. And we don't think much that we are being tested. We simply want something and we strive for it. But a probationary disciple is one who follows the stage of aspirant, and we're still pretty much in the fifth pedal when this is happening. We realize that we're being tested, and we are holding firm to certain hypotheses about the path, certain things we accept as true even though we cannot prove them, and we work as if they were true, realizing that so many life circumstances are simply a test. Basically, in this stage of probationary discipleship, we are becoming the accepting disciple. We accept the disciplines of discipleship, and we accept what has been taught about discipleship. We accept certain hypotheses which have been given to us or which we begin to formulate for ourselves based upon our experience. We become the accepting disciple, and we move towards the first initiation. At the first initiation, we are still on probation in a certain sense. We are mounting the fixed cross. We are becoming the initiate of the first degree. But in a sense, we are not yet accepted. We are still on probation. The farther our probation goes, the more we tend to be confirmed in our belief that the hypotheses we have accepted are real, and the way we are trying to live is the correct way to live. And so we make a promise. We pledge ourselves irrevocably to continue in this manner of living. We have this pledge may be taken before the first initiation and may continue after the first initiation. In fact, it continues even after acceptance. But it's only the pledged disciple who can become the truly accepted disciple, in which the master establishes a link with the disciple, and that is a link which has not been established before. In a way, then, the disciple truly is part of the ashram, even though standing on the periphery of the master's ashram. The accepted discipleship is occurring somewhere between the first and second initiation, but there is no fixed term. And D.K. says a person may make quite a bit of progress in discipleship without being necessarily an accepted disciple, because this has something to do with the karma of the master and of the approaching disciple. So even as an accepted disciple, one is still pledged, and of course one still accepts these things. One has definitely accepted all that has now been proven to be true, and in a way, one is still being tested. But one is no longer, strictly speaking, a probationary disciple, because one is brought into a definite relation with the master. So the probation is, in a way, to determine whether or not one can be affiliated directly with the ashram and contact made with the master. It doesn't mean that tests end. Tests continue all the way. We are, in a sense, tested all the way. Well, we're tested all the way. The peculiar testing potency of Scorpio is with us until the third degree is passed, and then that Scorpio energy may be involved even in the fourth degree in yet a different manner. So the testing continues, but the stage of probationary discipleship is ended, because we are brought into direct affiliation with the master. We are now an accepted disciple, very much under Saturn and Mercury, but we retain our pledge, and that is why D.K. so often talks about the pledged and accepted disciple. Okay, I think I've overcome time here. Every one of my different recording systems is on a different time. This is truly a third-ray moment. And so I have really no idea how long this program is going to last. All right. So now let's go on. The cross of the crucified Christ, the outstandingly the cross of the soul, or let us call it the soul in emergence, or shall I call in emergency. The man who is upon the fixed cross is becoming increasingly aware of its direction and influences, increasingly aware of where the fixed cross is leading, perhaps, or the direction of the soul, whither the soul is tending, and of the, often intrusive influences of the soul. He is not functioning so blindly as before, as does the man upon the mutable cross. Upon the mutable cross, for a great deal of time on this cross, the mutable cross, we are still in the hall of ignorance. While still on the mutable cross, we transfer out of the hall of ignorance into the hall of learning and are then working within the petals, the love petals of the egoic lotus, but we are still on the mutable cross. The mutable cross takes us all the way into the process occurring in the fifth petal. And it's only once that petal is completely unfolded that we can truly be said to have stepped onto the fixed cross. There is that overlap period, as I've been trying to say, that period toward the end of the mutable cross and the beginning of the fixed cross, where two types of influences are operating simultaneously. So the fixed cross is emerging when in this stage of probationary discipleship. Now, if we consider that probationary discipleship can begin before the first initiation, then the fixed cross begins to emerge before the first initiation. If we consider that a man is only truly on probation when he has taken the first degree, which would be maybe an unusual way of considering things, then the fixed cross and probationary discipleship would emerge at the same time. But I think it is safer to consider that before we are an initiate of the first degree, we are an aspirant disciple who is on probation being tested for our fitness to take the first degree. There is a certain fluidity in the sign Gemini and with the planet Mercury, and we have Master DK being, in a way, a representative of both of those factors. And he does keep his terminology fluid so that we do not grasp with a rigid, concrete mind what is said and somehow make the word the reality. He helps us develop fluidity of mind, which leads to a greater possibility of becoming intuitive, of becoming an abstract thinker, yes, and finally becoming intuitive, into the rigid and fixed concrete mind. The intuition cannot descend except occasionally as a destructive force causing great cognitive dissonance. So he is not functioning on the fixed cross as blindly, though still somewhat blind. I think that's the implication, though still somewhat blind, because still, at first, a probationary initiate. Probationary. We're always blind. You know, at any point in this universe, we are blind to the absolute reality about which we cannot really even speak. There are degrees of blindness all the way to the ultimate throne of the Universal Logos. And the Universal Logos, in his own supreme place with respect to any universe, would have to admit that he, it, she, whatever, that Logos is infinitely blind compared to whatever state exists in absoluteness. Well, at least this is one of my theories, that anything, however vast, which has been separated off in illusion from absoluteness, is infinitely removed from absoluteness. It's as if to say that the great contrast is not the absolute and the many, but the absolute and the one. The one is as far removed from absoluteness as may be possible. Now, one day, maybe I'll try to prove that, if I ever acquire the means of doing so. But right now, it has to remain an impressive thought, at least impressive upon my consciousness, and what may be ultimately an intuitive thought that remains to be seen. So he does not mount the cross of right direction. I love that term. Cross of right direction. Now I see why he said here earlier, the man who is upon the fixed cross is becoming increasingly aware of its direction. Its must be the soul, definitely. Not the direction of the cross, but the direction of the soul. The cross of right direction. And, you know, could we call the mutable cross the cross of any direction? In other words, there is less directedness, and one can fall into matter and remain trapped there because one has taken the wrong direction. The muddy road, you know. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead. But one does not have the vision, the sight, the intelligence to know that. So I like very much this term. And when you see people who are really rightly oriented in terms of the soul, right, let's see, how can I do that, right orientation in terms of the soul, towards the soul, we know then they are either approaching or on the fixed cross. So the cross of right direction, he does not mount the cross of right direction in a technical sense until he has attained some measure of soul contact and has had some touch of illumination and of spiritual intuition, no matter how fleeting that touch may be. Well, we ask ourselves then, can this occur before the first initiation? And I suppose, to a degree, when we speak of spiritual intuition, we are reminded of its greater fullness in the third degree. Spiritual intuition at the third degree. But then the first and the third are connected, just as are the second and the fourth and the third and the fifth. So, you know, we may remember this statement from Dina 2, mental illumination, spiritual intuition. I suppose this may be the place. No, maybe not. I really should find the way to find that all the time, reliably. Here is the quotation I was looking for. It was not it was not spiritual intuition so much as spiritual instinct, interestingly enough. Let's take a look here. Spiritual instinct, the lowest aspect of the intuition, indicates readiness for the first initiation. An illumined mind and spiritual intelligence are the definite sign that a man can take the second initiation. Doesn't say he will, does it? While spiritual perception or intuitive instinct, there it is, signifies preparedness for the transfiguration, the third initiation. Intuitive instinct, it begins to operate automatically, just the way spiritual instinct, the movement towards the higher energies, begins to operate automatically before the first initiation. So this is on page 267 of Dina 2, and maybe it would be good to kind of transfer that in. I'd like to do that. Dina 2 to 67. By this time I should be remembering these things. And here we have, we'll go green. Okay. And go to a smaller font to keep that in proportion. So before the before he mounts the fixed cross in a technical sense, there has been soul contact. Let's just say that quite a sufficient rapport with the soul must be signaled at the first initiation, per se. But soul contact is really contact with the higher of the pairs of opposites and can begin in the fifth petal. There's been some illumination, which illuminates the way ahead. Some touch of spiritual intuition, some direct seeing of the world of the soul. That won't do. And I'd like to put that in. Some direct seeing of the world of the soul, even no matter how fleeting. World of significance, world of the soul. No matter how fleeting that touch may be, it's given for inspiration. It's given as encouragement. It enthuses the individual, and he moves forward in the right direction towards a point of tension where more of that kind of touch may be experienced. There are such excellent statements here, I see, from the Tibetan on the fixed cross. The cross of fixed vision and of immovable intent, which draws the man from points of light to blazing solar radiance. Obviously, what we have here is something really in the nature of the old commentary, such excellent poetic words. There are points of light and little realizations, maybe we can call it that, points of light, and I'll get my bracket here. The points of light, I would say, are small realizations. To blazing solar radiance, where the full effect of solar fire is realized. Well, maybe not the full effect, but there's a very great effect by the time the third initiation is reached. It's one of those moments. It is the moment when solar fire really and truly dominates fire by friction. The man upon the fixed cross says, "I am the soul, and here I stand. Naught shall remove my feet from off the narrow place whereon I stand. I face the light, I am the light, capital L, and in that light I shall see light." Magnificent mantram. Excellent mantram. And worth memorizing. I am the soul, and here I stand. Naught shall remove my feet from off the narrow place whereon I stand, because there is not a whole lot of latitude. The sense of soul can be lost if one becomes engaged in identification with all kinds of lesser contents of consciousness. So there is a precise point of tension. That narrow place, to me anyway, means a sufficient point of tension from which one cannot deviate. Any deviation will reduce the point of tension and make it impossible to perceive that which the soul perceives. Naught shall remove my feet from off the narrow place whereon I stand. I face the light of wisdom, and I am the still greater light. I am the light with a capital L, and in that lesser light of wisdom, growing wisdom, I shall see the great light. And that will happen when I enter the cosmic ethers and maybe for a while stay on the fixed cross, but not for long, onto the cardinal cross. So these are excellent names. The cross of right direction, I want to make that bigger, just to impress it upon the memory. The cross of right direction, and also the cross of fixed vision and of that immovable intent. Notice how the will is involved here, at least that part of the will which is expressed through fixed determination, right? We call it fixed determination. Reminds one of Taurus very much, which draws the man from points of light, which are minor realizations in the light of wisdom, to blazing solar radiance, which might in this context be seen as the light with a capital L. I am the soul, and here I stand. Naught shall remove my feet from off the narrow place whereon I stand. I face the light. I am the light, and in that light I shall see light. Very progressive mantra, and ensures that we stand upon the fixed cross at a necessary point of tension within the light generated to see the far greater solar light which is revealed upon the fixed cross. It's more like the electric light or electric fire is revealed upon the cardinal cross, but some intimations of that must always be found upon the latter part of the cross proceeding. On the latter part of the fixed cross, intimations of the light electric must be sensed, and thus it is intimations of solar fire, solar light must be sensed on the latter part of the mutable cross. All right. It is the cross whose four energies blend with and transmit the energies of the solar system itself. Well, yes. So it is the cross of solar fire, and that which comes from the solar logos through his system is principally solar fire. So this it can do because the man upon the fixed cross is becoming increasingly conscious of issues larger than himself. So upon this cross we leave egoism behind. Very much when we're on the mutable cross, the climax of the mutable cross is the realization of the integrated and powerful personality. We can't really say that when we have an integrated and powerful personality, we have stepped upon the fixed cross. No, because that's the cross of the soul. But the apotheosis of the experience upon the mutable cross is that kind of powerful, dominant personality operating, as DK says, from three lives or seven lives or maybe occasionally even 11 lives. Why those numbers are chosen must be a great hint. How long does it take and why are those numbers chosen? It's as if three and seven, you know, are two numbers of completeness. Three is a number that gives us the fullness of the three aspects of divinity, and seven is a number, maybe of a rather longer testing, where all of the seven rays have to be experienced, not just three. Maybe the one who operates in the dominant personality during three lives is somehow moving fast. As for 11, it reminds me of the number of hierarchy and of the initiate, but also of the fact that it is one number short of the complete zodiacal round. So you wonder how many lives it takes under the influence either of rays or aspects, three, rays, seven, with the rays of attribute added, or almost the complete zodiacal round of 11 to end that period wherein we are the dominant personality. So it is the cross whose four energies blend with and transmit the energies of the soul itself. We become soul sensitive on this cross, and we pass through the experiences, as I've oft repeated, of blinding light, Taurus, fiery pain, Leo, bitter woe, Scorpio, and liberation, Aquarius. This it can do because the man upon the fixed cross is becoming increasingly conscious of issues larger than himself. We leave egoism behind, and we are becoming decentralized on this cross, and not really before. You know, we may be forced into sacrificial situations in sacrifice petals, but often it's the compulsion of life and circumstance itself that forces us there, and not because we choose a more decentralized position. Issues which are larger than himself, more engrossing than his previous interests, and which concern humanity in its relation to the solar forces and not just to the planetary forces. Human beings have many distinctions, and the planetary forces tell us about those distinctions in their various combinations. But the sun, let's just say, the sun, the solar logos, solar fire unifies us. And on this cross, the fire of love, which is solar fire, and also the fire of mind infused with love, is presented to us, and we realize that when we were solely in the realm of mind, living the life of ordinary experience, we did not know this solar fire. So he's becoming sensitive to the larger whole, and there is much of Sirius on this cross, and also of Leo. It is the, in a way, the cross of the heart. All right. Well, we're getting there. I have no idea how long this particular program is lasting. All of my chronometers are off. All right, and finally, the energies of this cross continue to evoke response until the third initiation, and there are other things he has said in other places where the hint is given that even after the third initiation, the energies of the fixed cross can be effective, but not at the fourth initiation. So the question arises about when man, at what point, arises about at what point the man is no longer responsive to the esoteric rulers and the fixed cross. There may be some energies of the cardinal cross intuited or somehow touched some greater sense of wholeness before a man truly dismounts from the fixed cross. But there will be a time when neither of the crosses characterize him as he passes through the fourth degree. There is a point at which he has to overturn the cross, and the cross which he overturns is his own cross, I do believe. Let's see if I can find that. Cross and overturn. Overturns. Well, it's there. Something like Rosie, cross. Let's see if we can find this. A rosy cross is seen, and at the center of the cross, where the forearms meet, a rose. Upon the upper limb, a vibrant diamond shines within a five-pointed star. And here we have liberation in stage five. This is well worth memorizing, I think. Out into radiant life and radiant light, the cave is left behind, the cross is overturned. It is the cross which a man is that is overturned. He is no longer bound to matter, and he becomes, in a way, the five-pointed star. And in doing so, he mounts the cardinal cross. So these are the stanzas for Disciples from Volume 1. They are so poetic, they are so powerful, and they carry the story of man. So if we could memorize these, we would have, in a way, the whole history of man in terms of color and his progress all the way through to the fifth degree, I would say. But it begins very early in the history of man during the red stage. Yes, maybe that will be a project at some point, the memorization of that one. That would be, I think, a good thing to do. So the energies of this cross continue to evoke response until the time of the third initiation. As I said, I'm pretty sure that as long as the soul grows, as long as the consciousness grows, which it does, even though the monad is coming in, soul consciousness continues until the fullness of the flower is achieved at the fourth degree. So this is the cross of the soul, and the soul continues to grow. Of course, there is the overlap now, because the monad, who does represent the cardinal cross, is also coming into the picture. Electric fire is coming into the picture. The higher aspects of the spiritual triad, especially the Buddha at this time, is coming strongly into the picture. So we do not have unadulterated soul influence. It's mixed with spirit influence. And yet we must say that the causal body continues to grow until just before the fourth degree, where it is at its fullness and then is destroyed. There's a tremendous expansion of consciousness which is occurring before the fourth degree. And so from that point of view, I would think, as DK seems to have said elsewhere, and I'll have to find that elsewhere, hope it's not just in my own mind, I don't think so, that the fixed cross energies continue. Because, you see, look, the fixed cross is the cross of the soul ray. The immutable cross is the cross on which the personality ray emerges. But on the fixed cross, the soul ray emerges, and the soul ray is potent still as a sub-ray of the monad until the fifth initiation. Because the soul ray rules the atomic permanent atom around which the atomic body is constellated, and it is that body very much through which the master is learning to function, buddhi and atma, the two lower projections of the monad. So if the ray of the soul is characterizing the atom around which the vehicle of the master is built, then that vehicle must be somewhat conditioned by the soul ray. Now, of course, it makes something very interesting here, because it means that in a way the soul ray influence continues until the fifth degree, even though the power of the monad and the ray of the monad is becoming dominant. So what does that say about growth of soul consciousness within the triad? Soul consciousness continues in a way. Does this in any way involve the fixed cross? Because we're not truly on the cardinal cross until we reach the fifth initiation. At least that's how I conceive it. After we overturn the cross at the fourth initiation and out into the wide and blazing life, until we do that, we are not yet fully responsive to the monad. And even as a master, think of it, the monadic ray is not the only ray. Because as a Chohan of the sixth degree, you are truly, in all respects, the monad, and the monadic ray is all-powerful. And maybe there are two monadic rays. The other monadic ray, the still higher one, is coming in. But that higher version of the soul ray remains. And if the fixed cross is, in a way, the cross of the soul ray, then we wonder how long that type of responsiveness to the esoteric ruler can continue. These are simply questions that I pose. Whenever I hope that Master DK or the intuition will someday answer the questions, I lift the questions up and I say, this is the question. And our intuition, the intuition of all of us, can play upon it, and we can see whether we will get results. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to end this, end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 137A, and we are on page 555. Somehow an important Venus number, isn't it? If Earth is 777, Venus is 555, somewhat correlating with the idea that in five scheme rounds, Venus has managed to finish what it must. And then I'm going to say beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 138, and I hope to get my time back, page 555. So I'll let this pass for now, and I'll go on to 138. We're in a very interesting section of the book. I'm so amazed at these words, the cross of right direction. Here we are told things about the crosses, which we really must remember. The cross of fixed vision. You can see the role of Sagittarius upon that cross, even though it's a mutable sign, can't you? And of Taurus as well. Remember that any type of sign can function upon one of these great crosses of consciousness. So the fixed cross experience can be fairly long, and you can be born in any sign with any combination of signs, not just fixed signs, of course. All right, I'll stop talking now, and I can't believe it. I have somehow, my timing is off. All right, we'll let it go, and we'll see you soon.